myemma.com/NPR.
Good morning. Welcome to Radioactivity. I'm Rob Lurie. Well, coming up, mainstream news organizations are going through hard times, especially in the last 20 years. Circulation of print newspapers is down. The viewership is down for the 6 p.m. newscasts on local TV. 35 years ago, the Tampa Bay area, including Tampa, St. Petersburg, Sarasota, Bradenton, Lakeland, and Clearwater, was served by 8 daily newspapers. Now, there are only 4 dailies. The Tampa Bay Times is the largest of the remaining newspapers, and it is unusual among newspapers. The Times is a for-profit entity, but it is owned by a nonprofit organization, the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, located in St. Petersburg. The new president of Poynter is Neil Brown, who until last month was the editor and vice president of the Tampa Bay Times. He's a graduate of the University of Iowa. He had been the managing editor at Congressional Quarterly. He joined the St. Petersburg Times in 1993, and in 2010, he became the top editor of the Tampa Bay Times. And under Brown, the Times has won 6 Pulitzer Prizes and launched PolitiFact. And if everything goes well, he joins us right now by ISDN. And Neil Brown, welcome to WMNF. Okay, looks like we don't have him here. All right, we're going to take a break see if we can connect with Neil Brown at the Poynter Institute. There he is. Neil, are you there?
Rob, I'm here. How are you?
Great. Thanks for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Congratulations on the new job.
Thanks. I'm looking forward to this gig.
All right. So tell us, for a lot of folks have just moved here to the Tampa Bay area in the last few years. What's the relationship between the Tampa Bay Times and the Poynter Institute for Media Studies?
Sure. It's actually unique in the world of American journalism. But the longtime editor and owner of then St. Petersburg Times, Nelson Poynter, he had a vision. It was truly a visionary, and he, in the 1940s, sorted out what has happened today, which is the possibility that local newspapers might fall into the hands entirely of chain ownership. And so he had this great idea to preserve this. And so upon his death, which will be 40 years ago next year, right before he died, a couple years before he died, he created a school, then called the Modern Media Institute. And upon his death a few years later, rather than leave the newspaper that he edited and loved and had built into one of America's great papers, he left it, rather than to his heirs, he left it to the school to preserve independence and local ownership. So the Poynter Institute itself is now named Poynter Institute, is a nonprofit, but it owns a for-profit newspaper, once called the St. Petersburg Times and now the Tampa Bay Times. Again, it was a visionary move, and it's unique in the world of American journalism today.
And beyond the ownership of the Times, the Poynter also does training for journalists from around the world.
Yeah, it was more than just setting up an institute to own the newspaper, even though that was one of his key priorities. He also knew that, again, looking ahead, that journalists who are practicing in the business would be subject to all kinds of changes in their industry and would need to constantly hone their skills well beyond their days in journalism school. So he created this institute, which is today a global leader in training professional journalists, both in the United States and around the globe, on everything from digital innovation to writing and editing to leadership to ethics to fact-checking. And so both enterprises, both the Times and the school, thrive today.
Well, if the Times had been owned by a chain, can you speculate what kind of pressure the Times would be under if it was owned by a for-profit chain, rather? Can you speculate as to what kind of pressure it would be under today?
Well, more than speculate. I worked for chain papers that today still do some great work, and I want to be clear, the Times itself is not immune from a lot of these pressures. It's just that if you are owned by the Institute or a nonprofit school, as the Tampa Bay Times has been, your first priority remains to the local audience and to your community, and not necessarily to shareholders in New York or elsewhere. So the Times, again, as I said, as well as all of its products, have been not immune from the incredible pressures that are on the news industry, but they have been able to more methodically and deliberately respond to them rather than make short-term drastic cuts in coverage or in resource in order to satisfy shareholders who understandably want a return on their investment.
So let me change gears a little bit. Do newspapers have a future?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's important, whether it's you think about print newspapers or digital websites, TV stations, broadcast is under some of the same duress, for us to get away from what I think are false choices, that it's entirely an either or. I mean, if you're like me, and there's a lot of people, but depending on the time of day, you may read something online. Depending on if you're in a coffee shop or in your car, you may still want to listen to radio or put on a podcast in the evening or first thing in the morning. You may want your print product. So I think we have to get past the notion that everything is all or one. It never has been that way. I think what the news industry has seen is that now that people have so many choices and understandably want to customize the choices to their lifestyle and their behaviors, we have to respond with all kinds of choices. So the Sunday paper experience, I think, remains a gold standard in terms of journalism, and is still a great experience for readers in markets all over the country, and that suggests a print future. Meanwhile, there are the coolest digital sites around the country, some being run by traditional news organizations and many being run by new organizations that are coming up with cool ideas, and we get our news and entertainment and information from those too. And I don't think it's an either or.
In some ways, I think the all newspapers are in competition with themselves. That is that sometimes stories are published a few days ahead online of when they actually appear in print, and then when you get the print version, you might even get a shorter version of the story that you saw 3 or 4 days ahead online. Are newspapers in competition internally with themselves, and doesn't that create a problem that people can go online for free and read a story before it even is printed in the newspaper?
Well, that's a good question, and you're sort of raising several pieces of this sort of transition and transformation that news organizations like the Times and other great markets like Dallas and Boston are grappling with. I don't think I consider it a competition. I think that piece we've sort of solved over the last 5 to 10 years. I think the attitude we take at the Times, and that I know Poynter through a lot of its work is working with newsrooms to see, is that basically you want to be the news organization of choice for your audience. And as I said before, that means you may read, in the case of the Times, we have a day starter newsletter online in the morning. That is journalism produced by the same people who produce the print paper later in the afternoon or on Sunday. And so basically what subscribers and the supporters of news organizations are seeing is that I need my news team, and I need my news team, whether it be at the Tampa Bay Times or somewhere else, to provide me with all kinds of information all day long in all forms. And it's no longer a competition. There's certainly a major metropolitan news organization in the country that is not also completely the chief source of local information on digital platforms. So I think that competition hit us maybe 10, 15 years ago within, and now we've integrated newsrooms all over the country. I'm happy to tell you that Poynter is one of the leaders in helping newsrooms make that transition. But pretty much we're back to 24/7 news organizations that have all kinds of products: digital, print, video, podcasts, and it's all one big newsroom now in each organization.
And can you make money if people just get all their news online? I mean, it doesn't seem like the finances are there. If everybody's getting their news online, some people are not paying the Times to read your stories. Can you make money doing that?
Sure. Well, I think it's harder. Particularly when so much information and news, once the sort of digital opportunities became available, our instinct was to give everything for free, and now it's a little harder to charge. But I think you're seeing news organizations, Poynter led a terrific media innovation tour last week, taking some journalists to some of the biggest organizations in the country, like the New York Times and the Washington Post, and everybody is moving now toward, at some point, as whether it be your music or Netflix, whatever, that there must must be some kind of financial model where you pay, maybe if not by the piece, some kind of subscription, paying for good content. So we're maybe a little late to that. But you know, it's always been a situation where you want to collect a loyal following an audience, and you want them to see enough value that they will pay you for the content. That's a hard challenge, but we're doing it more and more. I mean, in the old days, when it was just print, nobody said, can you pay only for the sports section? You'd pay for the whole thing, and it would bankroll the sports section as well as other benefits. So I think the models are kind of like the news itself, are a little bit more complicated than we sometimes cast them. But increasingly, we can see still a pretty vibrant advertising market in print and digitally, and growing programs where subscribers are in fact paying for strong digital content. I would mention one other thing, which I think is something that's important both at the Times and at Pointer, which is I think increasingly people are willing to pay for something if they can trust it and find it independent, particularly in a environment where there's so much flying around and you don't know what to believe. And I think the independence and local nature of the Times, the work done promoted by Pointer, suggests that I think going forward, independence and credibility are going to be the coin of the realm, and people are going to be happy to pay for that.
Well, tell us, why should people trust what they read in the Tampa Bay Times? Why is it better than what I get online? You know, I get so much online, as you do, I'm sure, of all sorts of interesting stories that after some scrutiny don't check out. But why should we trust what we read in the Tampa Bay Times?
That's a question everybody should ask themselves every day about every news organization they're looking to, and news organizations have to establish both credibility and a trusted brand. I mean, the Times has been around for more than 100 years, and by now I think its credibility is well established, but everybody should be a discerning reader. I think what we have all sort of grappled with is that online, it's pretty easy to masquerade stuff that looks like news and turns out isn't news. So there is a bit of a consumer obligation to be aware and to sort of let the buyer beware, needs to be able to trust the news you're seeing. And I'm afraid one of the byproducts of technology is that sometimes things that are credible or made to look like credible news may be cosmetic and isn't there. So I think you have to spend some time with your brand. We've been around a long time. I think any new organization needs to earn its readers' trust. I think Pointer and the Tampa Bay Times have done that for a good long while.
Now, this morning I got in the email, as I often do, I get a flurry of stories. One story said that George Soros is spending $18 billion to start rioting somewhere November 4th. And the story had all sorts of links. But as you're reading something, as you're getting something across the transom, across the internet, and you're trying to determine whether or not it's factual, what do you do as a guy who's an expert in this?
Yeah, well, first of all, again, I think every reader is should be properly skeptical about anything you read and know what the brand is. So when an email like that comes, if you don't know the source of it, there's some fancy names that make them look official, I think you should be a sort of a wary reader, but not not a cynical one necessarily. Sometimes if something sounds crazy, it probably is. Increasingly, news organizations like the Times, again supported by Pointer, have come up with, you mentioned PolitiFact, there are now fact-checking websites, and you can go, and there are databases, you can go check out stories, you can actually email sites like PolitiFact and say, hey, do you know if this is true, and look up their database and sort of test stories. So we're trying to create a sort of a consumer reports for journalism, if you will, that allows you to sort of test the veracity. Here at Pointer, the International Fact-Checking Network is now based. It has set up a code of principles by which journalists should follow and fact-checkers should follow, and we are through the work at Pointer and the IFCN are providing fact-checking support to. There's fact-checking operations now in more than 50 countries around the world. There's certainly the number of great fact-checking operations in the States, and that's become sort of a component of American journalism or journalism at large. And I think that gives some of our audience some more sources by which to test some of the stuff they see, particularly the stuff that's flying through emails and online.
Well, our guest is the new president of the Poynter Institute for Media Studies in St. Petersburg, Neil Brown. That's the nonprofit which owns the for-profit Tampa Bay Times, and you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. So when the Tampa Tribune folded, was it the Tampa Bay Times that actually bought the Tribune property, or was it Poynter that bought the Tribune property?
Well, you know, Poynter is the controlling shareholder of all of it. And again, the operations are run somewhat separately, though there is a single chairman, Paul Tash, who oversees both Poynter and the Times. So the day-to-day and the negotiation with the former owners of the Tribune for the purchase of the Tampa Tribune was done by Paul and the executive committee of the Tampa Bay Times. So if you're really getting into the practical side of it rather than the legal side of it, the Times purchased the Tampa Tribune and then consolidated it into the Times.
In hindsight, are we better off now that the Tribune is folded?
Well, listen, nobody in the news business, and I've been in the business 40 years, wants to see a newspaper fold, but the reality was that both newspapers were in serious financial decline because the reality, if you look around the country, Rob, is that pretty much there are no metro areas that can support two newspapers. So there's no doubt nobody would celebrate the closing of a newspaper, and the Tampa Tribune was a great newspaper with a great history. There was no long-term viability for two newspapers, and the Times was in a much more solid and strong position to be the newspaper that was going to have to survive for Tampa Bay. So it was, in a sense, a matter of survival. We did, at the Times, hire a number of really talented Tampa Tribune journalists and tried to preserve the character. TBO is now part of the media landscape. That's the Trib's digital site, and we've maintained that. It's a tough equation, but now we've got one of the strongest newspaper markets in the country, with the paper that's the largest in Florida and one of the top 10 in the country. That could not have happened without a consolidation of the two papers.
So, and these kind of questions, I should ask these of Paul Tash, but let me just throw this out to you. So since the Tribune folded, I know that a lot of people who were Tribune customers have not bought into the Tampa Bay Times. And the Times itself, I think, has done a job of trying to reaching out to conservative readers, especially on the editorial page. We're seeing more conservative op-eds, Peggy Noonan and many others, mm-hmm. Adam Goodman. Still, I think a lot of conservatives are a little bit skeptical of the Times. At the same time, I hear from my liberal friends, and they're all angry because the Times has endorsed Rick Christman. Has endorsed Rick Baker in the St. Pete mayoral race, and right. My liberal friends say the Times has been tougher, the news content has been tougher on Christman than it has been on Baker. But what would you say to newsreaders, though, who are angry at editorials, who and think, well, I don't really need to buy a newspaper because maybe I can get it online. But what do you say to those folks that have kind of backed away as the Tribune has gone away and as the Times has tried to change somewhat its character?
Well, you know, we anticipated this, and it's true in every market. It's a polarized society where I think the challenge, and I think Poynter itself, to keep the two concepts together, because they're not separate in this sense. Poynter is working on issues like news literacy and helping not just the the people who produce news and journalism, but also those who consume it, understand, the concepts of independence, credibility, accuracy. You know, publishing news reports and journalism and newspapers in particular has never always been a very popular endeavor. Back to your ultimate point, listen, we understood that. When I was growing up in Chicago, we got four newspapers and two of them folded, and it took us a while to get used to the other two. And people have a local attachment to their longtime paper, and we respect that, and we get it. Now then you lay over the current political dynamic. The question always is, do people want opinion pieces in particular that only support the views they already have, or they want to hear a mix? We've done a pretty darn good job of holding on to Tribune subscribers, but we're trying to do it respectfully. We are trying to expand our coverage, and I would say that we continue. It's a year. It's just about 15 months maybe since the consolidation. We ask people to give things a chance. We've got the best at the Tampa Bay Times, the best sports section in the area. One of the things that is a point of distinction, whether you're conservative or liberal, is you are looking for local news. And there are not many local news sites. There are a lot of national news sites that might cover your interests on national and international news. But as a source of local news, whether it's your community newspaper or the Tampa Bay Times, whether you're in Tampa or St. Pete, if you want coverage of that mayor's race in St. Pete, or if you want coverage of the horrible situation in Seminole Heights right now, you need to go to your local newspaper. If you want the best coverage of the Tampa Bay Bucks, maybe not exclusively, you're going to go to Tom Jones and Rick Stroud and the Lightning. If you want investigative journalism like we did in St. Petersburg on the school system, you're not going to find that in other places. So I think we want people to understand, find some value. You don't have to love or like all of it. Find some value. At Pointer, we're trying to celebrate that kind of independence and that kind of work, because it is under assault in some quarters, certainly. And I want to plug, by the way, that we're giving Judy Woodruff an award next week, Lifetime Achievement Award, and I bring her up because she's a kind of a classic example of a journalist, again, in the public media space, that is exudes integrity, exudes sort of that balance that you've come to expect from PBS. So I think there's sort of room for all of it. I think probably news organizations and Pointer, we all have to continue to work at explaining and telling our own story rather than just telling everybody else's stories, to show there's real value if you're interested and you want to spend the time and you've got an open mind.
Neil, I know you got to go in a few minutes, I've got two more questions that I'd like to try to squeeze in. One is, some people predicted that we're going to go back to the late 1800s, early 1900s, so that is business organizations, unions, political parties, they would really control news media outlets in the future from here on out. So instead of having maybe a newspaper that tries to appeal to a wide spectrum of an audience, you'll have a newspaper or a media entity that's now only, like Fox, is only trying to appeal to one part of the political spectrum. That's the future. Is that the future?
Well, I think just because of the sort of technological transformation and creating sort of news sites, whether they're digital or print papers, broadcast, in very narrow niche spaces, that you certainly are seeing a little bit of a proliferation of what you might call an advocacy press or a partisan press. Again, you raised the question earlier, Rob, about about models and financial sustainability. So I think those are going to require sort of some exploration of whether that model can exist. Do I think they're going to exist exclusively? No. I think American democracy is sort of built around, at some point, even though there have been times in our history where there's been more of an advocacy partisan press, but I think American democracy, particularly in a polarized society, ironic, it may sound counterintuitive, is going to value sort of up the middle, independent, credible journalists. That's one way or the other. And I think that, as I said earlier, I think independence is something that people will actually value, pay for, and that we should leverage. And I think our democracy kind of relies on, at some point, we all need an independent, honest broker. It will still be up to each of us to decide what we believe, and we have every right to do that. But I think an up-the-middle, independent, vibrant press is pretty much central to democracy, and that will prevail.
Neil, one last question. That is, at Poynter, folks who are journalists from around the world and around the country have come to Poynter for years to get training on kind of the latest techniques, on media ethics, on, you know, where media is heading. But I'm wondering, have you seen folks come from Drudge Report or Breitbart or Fox or Glenn Beck's organization? Do these kind of new media groups that are out there, have they come for media training at Poynter, and have you reached out to them? And what do you make, if they haven't come, what do you make of them?
Well, they are coming. They're not coming in as great a numbers, and we are reaching out to them. One thing that's sort of kind of universal is that whether you're writing for an advocacy side or not, you very much value questions of ethics, and you want to understand what they are. You value how to write, you know, and edit. The clear communication is still vital to whatever kind of news product you're producing. And so we've had members of Glenn Beck's program be on our national advisory board. We have done work with the Koch brothers in terms of training writing for college students, as well as done work with George Soros' operation. So right now what we're trading in is leadership training, digital innovation. We do, like you said, we've had journalists come here from 126 countries, and boy, they love the kind of training that Poynter is doing, because some of these fundamentals are universal no matter what your political point of view is, and whether it be in broadcast, radio, digital, we will teach you journalism, and then ultimately you're going to have to take that training and apply it in the ways that you want to.
Well, Neil Brown, thanks for coming on WMNF. Great to have you here. I hope we can have you back.
I'd love to join you again. Thanks for the opportunity.
All right. Thanks, Neil.
See.
All right. Bye-bye. That's Neil Brown, who until last month was the top editor at the Tampa Bay Times. Now he's taken a new job. He's the new president of the Poynter Institute for Media Studies, located in St. Petersburg. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa, 88.5 FM. I'm Rob Lori, and we're going to continue the conversation. I'm going to play some sound from President Trump yesterday, speaking of news media, and I want to get your take on this. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Email address, dj@wmnf.org. This is President Trump from last night. He was on the Fox Business Channel, and this is an interview that he did with Lou Dobbs, in which he expressed what he thought of the news media. Let's listen in on what President Trump said last night on Fox News. And you're listening to WMNF in Tampa. Here's President Trump with Lou Dobbs.
I've got to ask you, I mean, you're one of the most, I would say, by the left particularly, reviled, even hated men to ever hold your post.
I would say so.
You're also one of the most loved and respected.
I would say that also.
In history. And how does that feel? Where is Donald Trump today as you are just now beginning your presidency?
So the one thing that I really thought, because I thought I was treated very unfairly by the press during the campaign.
Without
and
me.
When I won, I said, the good news is now they'll start treating me well. But they got much worse. Lou, they put on stories on CNN, on NBC, and CBS and ABC, and NBC being an offshoot also with the MSNBC, which is ridiculous. They put on stories that are so false. They have so-called sources that, in my opinion, don't exist. You know, they'll say, sources have said, they're sitting down, they make it up. It is so dishonest, it is so fake. And, you know, I have come up with some pretty good names. So people, I think one of the best names is, you know, I've really started this whole fake news thing. Now, they've turned it around, and then now they're calling, you know, stories put out by Facebook fake, and they're fake. What could be more fake than CBS and NBC and ABC and CNN when you look at some of these stories and when you look at the amount of negative? I know when I do well and when I do badly. I know a good story from a bad story. But when you have a really good story and they make it bad, I'll say to my wife, oh, tonight I'm going to enjoy watching television because I did great. And wait till you see this. And then they put it on and it's like, oh, that's not so good. They are fake news. And the good thing about social media is that I have so many millions of people, so many, I guess 128 million, you could add up, you know, you add up all the different platforms, massive social media, at least I can put out, it's not that I want to do that, I'd rather not do it, I would love to not do it at all, but at least I can put out the truth, and I can put out the real word, and people agree. And if you look at the level of approval of the of media, of general media, if you look at it from the day I started running to now, I'm so proud been able to convince people how fake it is because it has taken a nosedive. Except for your show, of course, and Sean and a few of them, right? There's some very good ones. And I have to say, Fox has treated me fairly. And I don't mean good, but they've treated me fairly. I don't want to be treated good. I just want to be treated fairly.
Well, you are, if I may say, everything is advertised as you ran for president, and appreciate everything you're doing.
Lou Dobbs there saying nice things about President Trump last night during an interview on the Fox Business Network. All right, so what do you think about that? Our phone number, 813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. There, President Trump saying that MSNBC and some of the other networks have put on stories that are false, dishonest, and fake. Trump says that he started the term fake news and says that Trump says that he can put out the truth. He was very complimentary toward Fox. And he says that because of him, the news media approval has taken a nosedive. And I think I have not been able to fact check that, but I think that might be something that the fact checkers will look at in the next few days. Well, let's take some phone calls. Our phone number, 813-239-9663. What did you think of what the president said, and what did you think of the interview by Lou Dobbs and the questions that were posed to the president by Lou Dobbs? Let's see where we go. James Lyles is our phone producer today. Let's go to Gary in Dunedin first. Hi, Gary, you're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, Rob, if it's okay with you, I'd like to talk about the Tampa Bay Times. I've had conversations with those folks, and I got to tell you, I think that what progressives are upset about with the Tampa Bay Times is that, like many newspapers, and they do it because they almost think they have to, they engage in rampant boosterism. The Times is constantly running articles that promote densification, population growth, sports stadiums, tourism, fishing, hunting, off-road vehicles, consumerism, in the face of the bulldozing of Pinellas County and the environmental and quality of life destruction that we've seen in the last decades, they sell more papers when more people move here. They serve their advertisers in many cases. I know that they have won some Pulitzers, and they're not a Fox News type of newspaper, but they're not progressive. And just recently, I'll give you a quick example. I know you got other callers. I'm a vegan. And recently, one of their statured reporters had an article saying that McDonald's is using happy cows to make their dairy products. But when you read the article and looked at the pictures, the cows were all imprisoned, being abused, separated the mothers from the calves, etc. The articles never give a hint of acknowledgement of veganism, animal rights, depopulating Florida somewhat to get back some of our native ecosystems and species. The Tampa Bay Times is a boosterish paper for even MacDill and militarism. I don't like it, and I rely on MNF way more than the Tampa Bay Times.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. I got to say that MNF does get some of its information from the Tampa Bay Times. One thing I would say is that I think you're right. I mean, no entity is perfect. MNF's not perfect. No newspaper is perfect. So, you know, there are kind of mixed things going on at newspapers. And, it's not, I don't think the newspaper is designed to be a truly, you know, progressive, if you mean left-wing progressive organization. But I do think that you know, compared to Fox News or let's say Rush Limbaugh, you have a chance. You have a chance in an honest way to feed back. Let's say that you're upset at the story about McDonald's. You could write a letter saying, "Look, here's the truth about McDonald's based on your research and what you know." And if you give your real name and your real address, 9 times out of 10, I'll bet they print it.
No, I hear you, and actually,
which you're not going to get on. You're not going to get on Fox News, and you're not going to get on Rush Limbaugh, Breitbart, or any of those other places.
No, and I actually call the reporters in many cases, and they do have reporters that are doing real investigative journalism. They have one in Clearwater named Tracy McManus that goes after the Scientologists quite well. Craig Pittman, of course, whom you've had on many times, is often just saying, we've got to stop the population and development growth in Florida. But the Times has had financial troubles, and I really am troubled when I see them doing military boosterism, sports stadium boosterism, hunting, fishing, tourism. These are things that are negatively impacting the quality of most of our lives, and they seem to be on the wrong side because of money, and I worry about them.
Well, I see your point. I also see that, you know, great investigative pieces in the Times.
I do, too.
So, you know, I think we're better off having a system of strong newspapers where there are reporters, editors, fact checkers, and there's a lot of oversight. You know, if Craig Pittman is writing a story about the environment, he's got to interview 35 people before that story makes print, and he's got an editor looking over him, asking him a lot of questions to make sure that everything's straight in the story. And that doesn't happen at a place like Breitbart.
You're right. I mean, like I say, I see why they've won Pulitzers. They are, quote, more liberal than Fox or even some conservative newspapers. But I wish they'd be more left populist. And I wish would listen more to the MNF audience and not cater to the big money interests that have paved Florida and continue to degrade our state with their greed and their bulldozers, et cetera.
All right, Gary, thanks a lot. Thanks for your
phone. Thank you, Rob.
All right. 813-239-9663. Now, if you've got a different point of view that you want to get in here, we got an open line. You'll be able to get through right away. Here are some of the emails that have come in. Chip writes, it makes sense that mainstream media like the New York Times and the Washington Post, CNN, etc., would ignore or even smear Bernie Sanders as he is a threat to the establishment. But why did the Tampa Bay Times give so little coverage to him in the 2016 primary? Please don't say you gave him fair coverage. Trump was in your headlines every day, and the Times was clearly in Clinton's camp, writes Chip, who's in Tampa. Bonita writes, why does the Tampa Bay Times not run the disclaimer that Adam Goodman is a campaign manager for Rick Baker? Isn't that just fair? Thanks, Bonita, for that. And then John in Lakeland says, I've been a resident of Lakeland since my birth in 1936. My first job was delivering the Tampa Tribune, and I've read it for the past 65 years, or at least until it closed. The Tampa Bay Times is not delivered in Lakeland, and I would like to ask if it is going to be delivered in Lakeland sometime in the near future. And these are all kind of, I think, questions for the CEO over at the Times. Maybe we can get him on sometime. Tony writes this, the Times has been incredibly one-sided in the St. Petersburg mayor's race, treating Rick Christman like Fox News treated President Obama. In these hyper-partisan times, national politics become local. With their local control of the federal and state government now, the right wing can't wait to defeat one of the few progressive Florida mayors. That's Tony, who I don't know where he is. But Tony, thanks for your email. We do read these emails. We don't require an address. Maybe we should to make sure that we're not getting trolled. But I don't assume Tony's a troll either. Let's go back to the phones right now. 813-239-9663. Larry's in Seminole. Hi, Larry. You're on WMNF. What would you like to say?
I'm not Larry, but what I wondered, Rob, is why aren't you talking about the biggest story of the day, the fake dossier paid for by the Hillary campaign? They paid up to $6 million to fake a dossier. FBI knew about it.
Hey, Nick, why aren't you talking
about that, Rob?
Well, let me ask you a quick question. You call it a fake dossier. How do you know it's fake?
Rob, you got your head up your ass. Goodbye.
All right. That's Nick, one of our right-wing trolls, and it's okay to be right-wing, but Nick sometimes comes up with false information. Here's the story on the fake dossier that Nick calls it. There's a dossier that was paid for in part, as we know so far, by Republicans and by Democrats. The contents of that dossier are being gone through by, I think, at least three separate investigations in Washington, D.C. Some of the contents of this so-called, this is what the conservative media today is calling it, the PP dossier, because it involves an alleged sexual practice involving Donald Trump with Russian prostitutes in Moscow. And I'm not going to get into it. I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But some of that dossier has been confirmed. Now, not all of it has been confirmed. Now, I only know this from reading news reports. But we don't know if 1% of the dossier is true or 95% of the dossier is true. But some portion of it is true. And it's too soon for Nick or me or anybody else to make the claim that it's true or false in its entirety. That's just, it's just way too soon. We're going to find out. And I would hold your horses, and it's not the biggest story of the day. It is the biggest story of the day on Mark Levine and Rush Limbaugh and Breitbart and Fox News. But here we try to be independent. That is the media establishment today that helped elect the president. And what we try to do is be more fair than they are. But Nick, thank you. You've got some airtime. You got to raise the issue. Hope you're happy. Let's go to Jim in St. Pete. Hi, Jim. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, first of all, Nick's an idiot. The St. Pete Times long ago now stopped hiring actual journalists to run the paper. You know, Gene Patterson was the last one, as far as I can tell, a true, renowned, reliable, liberal journalist. Since then, it's been bean counters, you know, the guy who's in charge there. You know, the reason he's in charge of the St. Pete Times is Mary Evarts introduced him to his wife while he stayed in St. Petersburg.
Right. Well, Jim, how do you know this?
How do I know that?
Yeah.
My ex-wife worked for the St. Pete Times during the period. So I know all about the St. Pete Times. You know, and I should. But, you know, they have no business endorsing what's his name? You know, they just have no business.
Baker.
Baker. Because, right. You know, I know that the Republicans are willing to overlook anything to support Trump. Anything. It doesn't matter what it is. So maybe they should, you know, in that sense, be biased and just go ahead and support a liberal instead of somebody like Baker. You know, I just don't understand. But it's basically an abandonment of their semi-liberal position. You know, Nelson Pointer was not all that liberal. He was way, way against unions. I mean, way, way against unions. He was a pretty liberal guy in many ways.
On civil liberties, he was a leader on civil liberties.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not saying he would, you know. But
Jim, I see a lot of different sides on this. I've got conservative friends who email me every day, and they are so angry at the Tampa Bay Times, and they think it's a liberal paper. And I'm not going to out my friends. Sometimes you see them on my TV show. But they are so angry, and they don't read the Times. I mean, I'm wondering. If a newspaper is angering people on the left and angering people on the right, what does that say?
Well, you know, to some extent that can be a good thing. But when it gets down to the nitty gritty, you just don't support some guy like Baker. You know, it's just not acceptable, at least not to me anyway. So I don't know what's going on there. All the people I know are horrified by that. I just think that they have slipped and slid and they've gone. They still have, you know, they're one of the great newspapers. They still have good journalism.
As Gary pointed out, there's a lot of great reporters still at the Times.
Well, it's all for decades and decades. It was in the top 10 newspapers in America when newspapers actually, you know, made a difference. And, you know, it probably still is, I guess. I don't know. But they just, they've just fallen down. And they, you know, they are.
But you don't think that's the result of the downsizing of all print media?
Well, sure, sure.
Yeah.
You know, of course it is. And as I said, they're bean counters, so of course they respond by doing whatever they do. But
well, you know, I'm sure there was a day too. I've talked to people who back in the day were sports writers for the Times, and they had quite extensive expense accounts. I mean, there have to be bean counters today because those days are gone, where you could fly out, cover a game, spend maybe a day or two in town, and go out to nice restaurants and drink on the company tab. And those days are long gone.
Yeah, and people complain that they're a lot of advertising, very little content, and they do a pretty decent job.
But Jim, okay, so I think you've vented your frustration about the Times, but here's my belief is that really, for most of the media, the best reporting that's done in most of the media is done at newspapers. And that's the most solid stuff because, sometimes in radio or TV, we might interview one, two, three, or four people and then go with the story. In a newspaper, a newspaper reporter might interview 4, 5, 6, 10, 15, 20 people and then go with the story. And I think that's ultimately better reporting when you get a much wider view. The newspapers had staff and time to do that. You know, certainly it doesn't happen. You know, James O'Keefe, the conservative video guy, he doesn't do that. He just edits things in a way that makes him happy and will make Fox News happy, and that's what he does. And he pretends it's journalism, and he gets his subjects drunk. But that's not journalism. So I'm thinking that, you know, if we want to have good journalism, we got to have newspapers. Now, I hear you're angry at the bean counters at the Times, at the new management. Okay, but I still think we're better off. But I think the question is, how do you strengthen news outlets that really count? I think PBS is pretty good. I think MNF is pretty good. Otherwise, I wouldn't work here. But how do you strengthen those news organizations? And I think the Times is one of those news organizations that, you know, is better to have it than not have it. How do you strengthen it?
Well, not by making yourself into another Tampa Tribune, you know, not by, you know, it's just they have to do the right thing or they lose credibility. Like your caller said, well, they do this, they promote this, they do that. If they're really on that kind of, you know, the right direction on a slow slide in the right, so they want to pick up the people from Tampa and God knows, don't they have a New York Times paper called the Lakeland Ledger in Lakeland?
No, Lakeland's the Times sold its Gainesville, Daytona, Sarasota, Lakeland papers to a new entity, Halifax, and I'm pretty sure Halifax is still in charge. There's some great reporters at the Lakeland Ledger and at the at the Sarasota Herald Tribune, but they're downsizing too. All right, Jim, thanks a lot. I think you got it out. Okay. All right. Hope you feel better. Let's go to Katie, who's in Brandon. Katie, thanks for calling in. What would you like to say?
Hi. Thanks for having us on. You played the clip of Trump, and I was driving in my car, and I had the windows down because it's absolutely beautiful today. And, you know, starts talking. And, you know, every time he speaks, I really want to treat him as a president and, you know, like, let's pay attention and listen. And maybe, you know, for the love of God, something meaningful or thoughtful or just, I don't know, human will come out of his mouth. And every time I'm just, you know, I caught myself kind of, with the windows down and scared the guy in the car next to me. It's incredibly frustrating to have the person who's in charge of your country, or at least somebody who's supposed to act as a leader or a role model or just in some aspect, you know, get on the television and tell you that you're not supposed to respond or take, you know, this media, and the list just keeps going. I mean, he's actually sitting there thinking, like, which other one could I possibly name to let everyone know that they shouldn't trust that form of media? Like, only listen to Fox, who has me on today, to listen to me talk about how great I am. And, you know, he doesn't even really know how great he is. In that interview, in his little talk there, he goes to just explain that, you know, he has to go turn on Fox News at night to check to see if he did a good job. I mean, he thinks he did a good job, but he doesn't know. He wants to make sure the media knows. It's just, it's absolutely terrifying sometimes to hear that. And, you know, listening further into the conversation that's been taking place, you know, talking about our local print journalism,
you know, it's absolutely in a crisis. And the biggest thing I think that we need to point out about print journalism versus necessarily online or even television or internet is that print journalism is one of our strongest local news coverage. It does the most with our local government. It can give us the most feedback for those local issues. And those local issues, schools and hospitals, parks, all of that feeds into what helps us run our state and then also what feeds into what helps us run our country. If we're not capable of keeping an idea or keeping a lockdown on what's going on in our community locally and helping each other and our neighbor, then we're not going to be able to bring that assistance to the state level or to the federal level. And I think part of this attack on the media is to kind of keep us all very isolated to the point where we don't worry about our neighbor, we don't worry about our state, we don't worry about the federal government. We just kind of buy into what really just sounds like nationalism and this really weird sense of like patriotism, like where patriotism suddenly doesn't mean you look out for your neighbor, who in America is not going to look like you because that's the whole point of America. And, you know, you just kind of only look out for you. And it's very, it's very confusing to me. And I have a hard time buying into any real message that Donald Trump is kind of putting out there. It seems like everything that he does is just to kind of make us, like minions maybe. Like we're just supposed to listen and be quiet and that's kind of the end of it. I don't really know. But I really think we need to start doing more to support our papers. Even, you know, if we think they're not biased or they're not well-researched, you know, those resources to go research those articles or to fact-check those, you know, it's just time-consuming, but there are, you know, hundreds of thousands of us in this community. And it is on us and our responsibility to support those papers by having subscriptions, by, you know, communicating with the editors, by writing in, by contributing, by commenting, and it's important. I really feel like the print journalism, you know, regardless if you think it's slightly biased or slightly not, you know, that is part of the system of government that we have, and it's adamant that we maintain it for the system of checks and balances in our country.
All right,
and
Kate.
With the president that we have currently, it obviously needs to.
Katie, very well said. Thanks a lot for calling in. I'm glad you made it through. All right, Katie, very well said. Thank you. James writes this, I seriously wonder if America will be America past the Trump presidency. The lying bigotry, James, I'm sorry I didn't read that very well, but I think we got your point. And then Peter writes this regarding Lou Dobbs. Lou Dobbs is nothing but a Republican lapdog, blissfully participating in the paid political commercials for the GOP that are the real fake news. That's Pete, who's in Tampa. And then Ed writes, caller Gary does not seem to realize that Tampa Bay Times has to pay the bills. Any paper or radio station that tells me only what I want to hear is doing me a disservice. Traveling and reading other cities' newspapers gives me a great appreciation for having a paper as thoughtful and honest as the Tampa Bay Times. That's Edward, who's out there in cyberspace. And let's go back to the phones. You're listening to WMNF in Tampa. And here is Larry in Sarasota. Hi, Larry. You're on. What would you like to say?
Hey, good morning, Rob. Hey, it's great we're talking about news. I haven't heard much outcry about or the two information that the DNC as well as Mr. Clinton was all about this fabricated story of Trump connected to Russia. What do you think about that?
Well, Nick called about that earlier, and we talked about it earlier.
Maybe I didn't catch that part.
Yeah,
I
mean,
it's
the story essentially is that the Democratic Party paid a company to hire this former British spy to do a dossier on Donald Trump. And I think the evolution of that was, I think the idea first came from the Republicans, then the Democrats hired the company. This dossier was written. Now the dossier is being investigated by, I think, three separate entities in Washington, D.C. They've been able to corroborate some of the of the dossier. They haven't been able to corroborate it all, but the investigation hasn't ended. So we don't know if 1% of the dossier is false or 95% is false. We don't really know. So I think some of the conservative media today is jumping up saying, well, it's a false dossier, the Democrats paid for it, and they must have just made it up. Well, that's not true. You can't jump to that conclusion yet. That may be the conclusion down the road, but right now we know that part of the dossier is true. They haven't been able to corroborate all of it, and we don't know what the ultimate end of that investigation is going to be.
Rob.
Okay?
Rob. My point was, what do you think about either party paying for investigators to try to dig up dirt like that?
Well, what do you think has gone on for 50 years? That's what they call opposition research.
That's what they call opposition research.
We've heard about it, you know.
The Watergate break-in was to get dirt on the Democrats because there was a prostitution ring.
Right.
To try to get the names. I mean, they're always digging.
Right, but I would say, Larry, that if you think this is new, and you just said it happened during Watergate, it's true. It's not new. They do pay for it, and for anybody to be horrified that opposition research is being done, well, they must have been born yesterday. It is millions of dollars go into that in every election. Hey, if you want to comment about the show, 813-238-8001. Record your comment on extension 115. We'll play those comments back.